Good morning. Good morning, Lucien.
Well,
It is
technically it is
technically
1 a.m.
morning for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's
I'll take
so
that. I'll take that.
it's about 1 a.m. Where Lucien is, right? In Malaysia, 1 a.m. And it is 10 a.m. here in Phoenix, Arizona, in the United States. You are watching or listening to the Game Week 17 NetBet Hall FPL matchups review show. We will be talking about all the fixtures in Game Week 17. Some really oddball type of stuff going on. And then we'll be right into the matchups show for Game Week 18 tomorrow. So not much time to get this in your ears, but do come check it out. We're going to go right into it just to keep it as short as possible since the turnaround time is so short, less than 24 hours here before the matchups show. So we're going to get right into it, Lucien. Quick review of the Game Week 17 results. Forest nil, Spurs 2. We thought the FPL clean sheet was a myth, right? I think that's what we talked about. I've been talking about the past couple of weeks. So this is going to be a funny one. Spurs keep a clean sheet, Forest nil. Bournemouth 1, Luton 1. Obviously, there's still news to be released on that match and what's going to happen there. Chelsea 2, Sheffield United 0, City 2, Palace 2, Newcastle 3, Fulham 0, Burnley 0, Everton 2, Arsenal 2, Brighton 0, Brentford 1, Villa 2, West Ham 3, Wolves 0, and Liverpool and Manchester United a 0-0 draw. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 clean sheets, Lucien. Eight. So we'll get right into it. The top performers of Game Week 17. This one hurts me. The top just this one just hurts me because I wanted to go Mohamed Kudus, and I put kind of my FPL brain on, and I didn't bring him in. I wanted to go all football vibes, and I didn't do it. It was probably the smart decision, but it didn't work out regarding the FPL points. Which, yeah, FPL is a dumb game, but Kudus 16 points, Palmer 14 points, Keane 14, Burn 14, Kulusevski 14, Paquetá 14, Mateta 12, Onana 11, Amadou Onana 11. Did you see when he scored? Did you see that clip? They put Andre Onana's face up on the board.
Oh my gosh, it's just yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Like, man, I'm not even going to go into anything cultural here. Alex Moreno, my boy, who I would have started the season with if he didn't get injured, 10 points. And I may take a hit to just go cash to Moreno if I think he's nailed. We'll see about that. And then the other one, Andre Onana, 10 points, coming in there with 10 points. And we'll get into some Onana stats tomorrow. It's interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting matchup they have, but for now, let's get right into the review. Quick summary of Game Week 17. You can find it here, 3.5 minutes in. So top of the pile was Newcastle 2.14 net XG, Arsenal 2.12 net XG. Newcastle obviously scored 3, Arsenal scored 2, so right in there, right in line. Manchester City or Chelsea 2.07, they scored 2. Manchester City 2.06, they scored 2. So that was the top, and then a lot of the zeros, like Fulham blank, obviously red card played a role. United blank, and those were the only two that were below zero there. But both of them blanking. Let's get right into Nottingham Forest nil Tottenham 2. And I'll bring the stats up. I'll read out the XGs just for this one. I'll normally do that at the beginning, but just for this one, let's do that one later, just while I bring it up here. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, since we are on the, well, I think we've got to start with two premises, right? First things first, I think you rightly said at the beginning that if the smart decisions don't give you the right outcomes, then perhaps FPL is the dumb game. I think that speaks volumes of how terrible everyone's seasons has been so far. It just rang, man. Well done. And secondly, the whole clean sheet is a myth thing is great because I think, like you said, right, with 8 clean sheets this particular game week, we get to see in each of these 8 clean sheets what circumstances led to each of these 8 clean sheets. And I think we also get to dissect ourselves, which ones can be reliably depended upon and which ones are just one-off that you know are very unlikely to happen next game week. So yeah, so we'll start with Forest. And as you've rightly pointed out here, when Forest play a back five, it implies that, well, they have to play with the front two. And yes, Ilanga and I don't even know who the second forward is. Yeah, they just struggle for penetration because, well, when your midfield is Yates, Kouyaté, and Mangala, there is literally no presence with the ball going into the box. Everything is basically from the flanks, just drive forward with the ball, using Neco Williams especially, to look for targets in the box itself. So the question comes down to whether
Gibbs White.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Gibbs White was it.
I mean, it's just putting bodies in your formation for the sake of it. And, you know, I understand the calls for this particular Nottingham Forest side looking like a championship level team, because it really does. It really sincerely does. Just purely relying on quality on the ball by Neco Williams to look for targets at the far post. And it just so happens that Harry Toffolo, of all people, was the most available player. As in, you know, the player being unmarked, being the most free. However, I think we are more interested in trying to figure out where Forest are weak. And really, it just comes down to attacking Harry Toffolo. The moment you saw Kulusevski cut inside Toffolo, you knew somebody did not do their homework. Because Kulusevski on the right side, right, never showed inside. And yeah, Toffolo just stood there. It was just so disappointing to see. I think the other thing that Forest have a problem with is dealing with acceleration behind their backline. If you know any number nines that are going to run behind the Forest centre-backs, you're going to get big chances. So Forest's next opponents are going to be Bournemouth, Newcastle United and Brentford. So this sets the stage, not for Solanke, but for perhaps Callum Wilson, Rasmus Højlund, and perhaps Wissa. So, you know, those are three names that you can put on your watch list for now. But those are the type of strikers you can see chances to. As for Spurs, well, I mean, the popular players are all there. I think we have to be aware that Brennan Johnson came off really early and Spurs looked incredibly frail in the first 30 minutes. And it was only because of the injury, Kulusevski shifted to the wide right and Spurs looked a lot stronger on the flanks after that. So I guess it's a blessing in disguise for Spurs to keep a clean sheet. You have to abandon your plan A because, yeah, Forest handled that pretty well and just do what you do best on the flanks, which is Son on the left working with a fullback and Kulusevski working on the right with another fullback. Keep it simple.
Yeah, I think a blind spot for me was, well, you know, that first 30 minutes, Kulusevski was playing at the 10 position. And generally this season, I think he's just generally better suited for that position because he's not required to penetrate as much. But I think a blind spot was like highlighting that right-hand side. I didn't see Kulusevski moving back over there, but you're right. Once he did, they did look better in this one. So things a little bit different. And I mean, Toffolo's marking, I agree, was shocking. It was because you always know what Kulusevski's going to do, and he's not going to do it very, very quickly either, is he? He's going to do everything at the pace of Sap, kind of, and you know he's going to cut in, and you know he likes to like kind of like wrap his foot around, like I don't know, hit a kind of a flat ball there. So it was a really poor kind of awareness game, and Kouyaté as well. I don't think Kouyaté had a great game. Very good, very good. Moving on to the next one. Oh, really quickly on Forest. What did you see about on Porro? You know, I thought this was the game that he would really blow up in. You know, I made moves to bring him in ASAP because I thought this was the one. So do you still see the same things? I think he's somebody people want to hear about.
Well, I think this game, this particular matchup, highlighted the fact that Porro can actually be stopped because Kouyaté looked poor only because he had eyes only for Pedro Porro. The two central midfielders purely had jobs marking Udogi and Porro respectively. So they can be stopped, and Porro's big chances either came really, really late on when Forest went all out, Or in the first half, there was this one particular Porro chance where he was actually in the box itself, going for headers. So that's a sign, but it's a very unlikely sign expecting Pedro Porro to get a header in on goal. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think the fact that I think that's a trend. We've seen him a lot, very involved late in games. He gets forward a lot late, and they continue to look for him even late in a game when the game is won or when it isn't. So I think that's a very encouraging sign. All right. Bournemouth Luton. I think we're going to skip this one. Obviously, limited time that they played, not enough to draw conclusions. So we're going to move on to the next one, and then we'll get back to this one once we know more about it. Chelsea Sheffield United. I did not watch this game. Did I watch highlights last night? I fell asleep to highlights last night. I remember very little. Yeah, exactly. It was probably to this one. Highlights of this one.
Well, I mean, Chris Wilder is a local hero, but he continues to underwhelm with his use of his new star boy, Andre Brooks, because Brooks is a very confused midfielder at the moment. I think he was defending the left side now. Sheffield United are trying to alternate themselves between a 4-5-1, 4-3-3, whatever it is, and it's confusing. And I do believe that if you want to target Sheffield United for clean sheets, it's a very reasonable strategy. So, honestly speaking, if you want to swap cash for Moreno, I think that's perfectly fine. Because as long as you get somebody with 90 minutes playing for Villa, you are bang on ready for clean sheets there. Sheffield United don't have any resemblance of identity in attack, whether they play Osula, McBurnie in this case as a number 9. And the biggest problem is that they cannot even get out of second gear. Long story short, the passes from the back four to their best ball player, Gustavo Hammer, is just all cut out by Chelsea's energetic midfield. So really, we're going to spend majority of this time talking about what Chelsea do best, because finally, Jackson started, Sterling started, Palmer got to play his glorious number 10 role. And unfortunately, Raheem Sterling was the bigger influence, because as long as Raheem Sterling played on one flank, Palmer would go to the other. So in the first half, Sterling actually played majority towards the right side, and Palmer had, you know, all the time in the world to pick his spot and go, you know, as one of the late runners into the 6-yard box. That was how he got his goal. But as the game went on, you know, when Chelsea were leading, they brought on all these players. I think Gallagher got his yellow card pretty early as well. So yeah, Sterling became one of the strikers, and Palmer was reduced to that assister to the assister role that you mentioned. So I think it comes down to how much class Cole Palmer has on that right-hand side. Because on one hand, we can assume that he will play assister to the assister, but he's just got so much intelligence on the ball that he actually knows when to dribble past his marker. And he just got past an extremely aggressive Sheffield United fullback repeatedly in the second half, especially when Sheffield United tried to chase the game, that Palmer was just always at the byline, ready to cut back for whatever big chances created at the far post. So I think, yeah, on one last note, Conor Gallagher as a number 10, it's basically like Darwin Nunes as a number 9. He's just not made to be a number 10. And yeah, he has all that energy, but just zero finishing, because Gallagher, I think, has been not playing 10 for far, far too long, ever since his Crystal Palace days. And yeah, we've just got to leave it at that.
If Palmer and Sterling were the same price, who would you pick of the two?
Sterling, for more advanced positioning, as well as the difference maker when Chelsea need to break the deadlock. As much as I like Cole Palmer's influence that grows throughout the game, I do feel that Sterling is probably going to be like the most involved at 1-0. He's not the kind that will kill the game off at 2-0 or 3-0 like Cole Palmer does, but Sterling, when scores are level, if you foresee Chelsea going through a difficult patch, you know. I know the fixtures are easy, but against Wolves, Palace, Luton and Fulham, yeah, you really have to judge whether you think Chelsea will struggle through those four or whether they'll blast teams over 3-0. So if they win 3-0, Cole Palmer is going to outscore Sterling, hands down. But if you feel that they'll struggle away to Luton, they'll struggle away to Wolves, and Crystal Palace's new formation will be ready for them, then, yeah, Sterling is definitely much bigger as an influence.
So we're about to be, there's about to be a lot of funds flooded into FPL teams that for managers who sell Haaland, and price is not going to be an issue. One, I guess, are you going in on Chelsea assets? Do you have Palmer right now?
No, I have Jackson. No.
You have Jackson, damn it. So would you be getting one of those? And if so, which one?
I don't have a choice. Palmer just does not have any competition at that price range, even as a 6.0 midfielder.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, I'd love to find alternatives.
But who cares?
Yeah.
If you have Haaland money, right?
I mean, it's not more about the funds. It's more about the dumb decisions. Palmer is a dumb decision that you should make because he has so many avenues of scoring that, yeah, you should just have him. Yeah, the right. Dumb decisions work, and if they're there for you to make, just make them.
I hate that.
I know.
Okay, let's go to the Manchester City dominating Palace until they weren't. Manchester City 2, Crystal Palace 2. Don't have the non-Pen XG up here, but I mean, it'll. Pardon me. 1.6 XG for Man City, 1.82 for Palace. Obviously, they had the pen, so they're looking at about, you know, whatever, half that or so, or about 1 XG without that pen. Tell us what you saw in this game.
Well, I mean, Manchester City are just doing Manchester City things. Phil Foden was center of everything. And honestly, once they went 2-0 up, they were just cruising so badly. I think, they definitely let this one go. It was 2 points dropped rather than 1 point earned for Crystal Palace because Palace never really got out of their 5-4-1 formation, which is far, far more interesting than what City are doing. Because City are just being City. Is Foden focal to their attack? Yes. Who benefits? Definitely not Julian Alvarez, for one. Unfortunately, whenever Foden gets the ball between the lines, Oscar Lewis? No. Sorry, Rico Lewis, confusing him with Bob. Rico Lewis and Julian Alvarez both make decoy runs. That is exactly Rico Lewis's job in that attacking right half space. And usually, as the ball comes in, Foden will either leave it for Bernardo Silva on the right side, or he will just directly play back to Jack Grealish on the left. I think the approach is very simple, and it's so effective because Foden can drift to the left, he can drift to the right, and it just comes down to what space is created from the Alvarez and the Lewis runs. So honestly, if I had Julian Alvarez right now, it'd be a hard sell without question, even, you know, with or without the blank. After the blank, yeah, for that Sheffield United game at home especially, yeah, you're definitely looking at Haaland plus one of the City midfielders, be it Grealish, Foden, or yeah, a cheeky Bernardo punt if you want.
Assuming Haaland is back, right? Assuming Haaland is back, we don't know that he'll be back yet, for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So, Palace, I have good news and bad news. Good news is that their formation is becoming even more defensive and holes are starting to appear even more. The bad news is that Joel Ward aggravated a hamstring, so we don't get to target him anymore. Oh man, that one moment that Foden got to square up against Joe Ward in the left half space, simply because Joe Ward was used as an outside center back rather than as a full back, so the matchup was perfect. And yeah, when he was subbed off on the half hour mark, I believe, they fielded Chris Richards, a midfielder. They fielded him as centre-back. So Palace have a decision to make. Will they stick to this five-at-the-back system, which is starting to look pretty cohesive? Because, you know, I see Crystal Palace forums mention that this is actually Richard's best position. And will they rely on wing-backs such as Klein and Mitchell on the outside? Or will they, you know, go back to type and become their usual 4-1-4-1? That remains to be seen because, I mean, I really cannot say it. Palace's attack now hinges purely on Mateta doing things. So, yeah, you just require 2 moments. And otherwise, Palace created literally nothing when it was 0-0 or 1-0.
So how does Palace's attack rely on Mateta? And what is Olise's role or relationship to that impetus of attack from Mateta?
Sadly, Olise is barely involved. I think the only thing that made Olise shine here was that the fact that Eze was on the pitch, but Olise was the one that took the penalty, meant that, oh no, we can't exactly rely on Ebre Eze for penalty duties now. But yes, Mateta is basically the typical number 9 striker that just drifts out to the flanks, holds up the ball, and he brings somebody into play. So he works on the left particularly well here because, well, he's working with Jeffrey Schluck. And Jeffrey Schluck is that selfless, hardworking gem that now has another new hardworking midfielder next to him, David Ozo, who, again, none of this FPL relevant, but at least, you know, Palace are leaning left a lot better than their right side. Yeah, where it's just Olise alone.
All right. Newcastle 3, Fulham 0. Raul Jimenez ejected for a kung fu kick, Street Fighter style. XG 3.5 for Newcastle, 0.28 for Fulham. I don't think that's how it would have been without that red card, I have to be honest. What do you have for us in this one?
Well, when you go down the 10 men so early, like every chance literally was Newcastle. I mean, there was one particular chance that Newcastle gave away where Joel Linton overhit the back pass, but Joel Linton himself got injured anyway later on. So I do feel that the clean sheet from this particular case just, you know, stemmed from a pivotal moment that altered the whole course of the game. So, I mean, call it what you want, but I do feel that this particular clean sheet feels like a false dawn because, yeah, when you play against 10 men for majority of the game, I think we're trying to, number one, be interested enough in the things that remain constant. Anthony Gordon, especially, right? We were all concerned about his hamstring. And we know that hamstrings only get hurt when you do high-level sprints. And this was what Anthony Gordon did not do at all. He completely avoided trying to beat defenders down the line, trying to take them on in 30-yard sprints. And instead, he went extremely narrow. He did not play like a winger. And he operated in the left half space. He tried to link with Joel Linton. He tried to link with Wilson. And it was pretty good, actually, especially when Joel Linton came off injured and Longstaff moved over to the left. Because Gordon creates so much chaos. He's got this underrated tight control that I think we're starting to see now because, you know, we've always associated Gordon with somebody that just accelerates off the wing, right? But now, yeah, he's actually got pretty good passing. He's got a pretty good passing range in him and the players around him are all benefiting. So, yeah, I would strongly recommend Callum Wilson if Isak, for some weird reason, is not back. So, yeah, that's one Newcastle player to look out for. The other thing about Fulham, well, as usual, you can cause enough chaos in the half spaces, but in the end, the chances you create are all from the flanks. As long as you have wide players against Fulham, yeah, you're definitely gonna get something there. So upcoming would be Burnley and then away to Bournemouth, which is good for anyone who has Bournemouth wingers. And yeah, perhaps sometime down the line, Chelsea, if you have Raheem Sterling. Hope the Fulham is fantastic.
That interchange between Anthony Gordon and Joel Linton, we have seen that before, in several games before where he comes in but then look at the results, right? It was Joel Linton that was injured on making all those runs in wide. So they're falling apart as they get healthy here. Honestly, Harvey Barnes cannot come back too soon for this team. But I agree. Anthony Gordon continues to impress week after week. He just shows more of his ability and his versatility, like him as a player. Burnley 0, Everton 2. XG on this one was 0.71 for Burnley, about double that, 1.46 for Everton. Tell us about this one. And we won't take obviously too much time in this one, but I am interested in I'm just interested in Everton. I think we need to learn more about Everton to see if because there are moments that I think we can capitalize on a team like this if they're going to continue playing, getting results.
I've got
What do you
good
see?
news and I've got good news and bad news for you. I mean, you read those numbers out, and if I were to ask you to guess which one was the Sean Dyche team, you wouldn't have guessed it was Everton. let's start with the obvious things. Amdouni, yes and yes or no. Unfortunately, his influence will wane over the coming weeks, and the irony is that they are getting a striker back. And that has reduced their chance quality up front. Without Cole Osho off the left, they had relied on Amdouni for the last few weeks, right? But Foster finally coming back at halftime, yeah, just completely made Burnley blank. So I would say that we've looked at a few types of clean sheets for now, right? Since we say that clean sheet is a myth. So if you have a system that is in transition, is being bedded in, such as Forrest's 3-5-2, such as Chris Wilder's Sheffield United, whatever it is, as well as in this case, Burnley, right? They are trying to go back to a two striker system, and that is definitely going to hurt them for a little bit because they offered absolutely nothing, unfortunately. Now, for Everton, good news is that this particular formation was definitely far, far more offensive than their usual 4-5-1 because of Mikolenko's injury. Instead of a 4-5-1, they went with a 5-4-1. Dwight McNeil playing left wing back. How about that? How about that? So, the nice thing about this particular formation is that Harrison specifically creates from the right for McNeil. McNeil has absolutely no business venturing into the box unless Everton will get down the right side. Yeah, it was unlike previous games where McNeil actually took up the more advanced positions, and now, McNeil was the one taking up really advanced positions in the box to score goals, and I think that's what we want. Of
So
course.
just really quickly on that. So McNeil got moved back to wing back, and that
Yes.
move gave him an increased presence in the box.
Yes, that's correct. The unfortunate thing is that I think Everton had an injury midway through the second half, and so Harrison switched over to the left when they brought Lewis Dobbin on. So that's something we have to look out for, I believe. So if Harrison and McNeil play on the same side, we might be in trouble there. But I mean, do I dare recommend Everton when they play Spurs City up next? Maybe we'll wait for those two to go over first. Then we look at whether Mikolenko is back in time for Wolves right before New Year. Yeah, I think that's way more practical. But yeah, targeting Burnley, that's more exciting, right? Because Liverpool, Gaming 19, very, very interesting. It's all about the wide spaces. Burnley's back four, sorry, defend extremely narrowly. Brighton did it well last game week, and I will not be surprised if TAA or Tsimikas gets an assist in that particular matchup in game week 19. Who it falls for, I don't know. I really don't know who sits at the far post for Liverpool at the moment because I don't think they actually have somebody at the far post to score,
Sometimes it's Luis Diaz, but recently Darwin Núñez is in the way. So I think that's the overall thing that he's in the way. And yeah, the Burnley fixtures, I'm still holding Luis Diaz, and I'm hoping for something in that fixture. So we'll see. Cool. Moving on to Arsenal Brighton. Arsenal with a kind of like a dominating 2-0 win over Brighton. 2.34 XG for Arsenal, 0.69 for Brighton. I guess Milner started on the left there, didn't he? And he got hurt.
He got hurt. Well, I mean, he got hurt enough to make highlights. But the unfortunate thing was that Saka's shooting boots just went on. I think he had so many chances, like in the first half hour alone, but his shots were all straight at Verbruggen, which, yeah, was just unfortunate. Now that I've sold Darwin, I think Ødegaard's going to be my new Darwin. He has had so many big chances these last few games. Pretty much off Arsenal's creation. Bukayo Saka definitely is influential early on, but as the game goes by, I think what is nice about Arsenal's left is that it's starting to become more systemic in the sense that they at least are more deliberate in their choices, from Kai Havertz's advanced positioning, whether they use it or not, to Gabriel Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus just swapping positions out of nowhere. Like, I think after the half-hour mark, when Arsenal started to get frustrated, they started to progress the ball down the left side. And yeah, you suddenly saw Martinelli as the number nine, and you see Gabriel Jesus taking on Hinshelwood. No, Veltman at first, and then Hinshelwood later when he came on. So, Odegaard has so many choices ahead of him. And so, if he doesn't use Saka early on, he's going to rely on the left later on. So, it's just a matter of when you foresee the goals happening. So I'm not going to comment on Liverpool, which Arsenal have up next. But with West Ham, Fulham, Palace and Forest, yeah, it's very highly likely that they will score early against those four teams. Because, yeah, they're just pretty open in the opening stages of games. Well, except for Palace. Okay. I think Palace will concede late.
Really quickly, Pranav comes in. Havertz versus Odegaard, which one is a better pick? Odegaard. And obviously, Odegaard is a much better pick, but I like that he brings up Havertz because I started the season with Havertz expecting to see. So you're right about that left-hand side developing some patterns. And, I mean, there were patterns we saw in the Community Shield, right? And I think they're starting to come back and which is why I started the season with Havertz, and that didn't work out because the left didn't work out. But now that it is, I think the options kind of open up here for people. And Saka, I mean, I've said this for a few weeks, and I've tried to go without him. He's the worst asset in the game. He's terrible to own, and you can't not own him. It's awful. I think he should be removed from the game entirely myself, so then we can get onto more interesting things. But yeah, he's been so frustrating as an owner and a non-owner. It doesn't matter what I do. Saka's involved in a negative way in my FPL experience. So I don't know what to say about that. we'll move on. Just really quickly on Brighton, is there anything? Like, it's just a hard sell, right?
Well, yes. And I'm more concerned about how to target them because, I mean, we're not going to buy Palace players against them in 18. So really, the point of interest would be Spurs and West Ham in 19 and 20. I think Sun against Gross down that right side is fantastic. Kulusevski is going to be a cheeky pun, but no one really cares about Kulusevski at the moment. For West Ham, though, I do believe that could a swan song game before AFCON is going to be against Brighton. So, yeah, kudos until 20, hold him all the way. That's going to be a fantastic matchup. That's all I'll add to that.
Okay. Brentford Aston Villa, a couple red cards in this one. Brentford won, Villa two in the end, scoring after they got their red cards. Villa 1.42 XG, Brentford 0.51 XG. Again, Aston Villa away for whatever reason, they are a shadow of the team that they are at home. So, what did you see here at Brentford?
Well, I think first things first, we need to address the fact that Villa did not have Douglas Luiz for this match due to 5 yellow cards. I think that was a huge, huge factor for their creation, whether down the left or the right. Secondly, I'm going to start with the slides here because you raised some fantastic points. On Maupai / Wisa leading the line, Keane Lewis Potter started alongside Wisa. So this setup was a lot more cohesive because Lewis Potter is an out-and-out number 9. Wisa likes to drift left. Maupai likes to drop deep. But Keane Lewis Potter is actually a legit number 9 that likes to hang about at the back of defences. So this puts a lot of focus on their build-up down the left side where their most experienced players are all trying to work together. You have Yanel advancing. You have Wisa going wide. You have... And I think the most important thing about Brentford here is that the left creates for the right. Once again, but you know, I'm not going to spend too much more time on that. I'm going to look at Villa because, well, again, right, shenanigans. They reverted to the 3-5-2, which is usually good news for Medicash. And to be fair, Medicash did have a huge chance in the first half. So once again, it comes down to finishing. But we at least can assume that one wing back will reliably create for the other. Okay, so that's good news for Brentford. Sorry, that's good news for Aston Villa. And this is going to be regardless of what opponent they play. The problem, as with Aston Villa sides, is rotation. As much as we'd like to see Moussa Diaby as the one of the two forwards, unfortunately, he does not rotate with Bailey. He rotates with John Duran now. John Duran came on as the second number nine alongside Watkins in the second half. So instead, Leon Bailey played right wing back. He came on for Matty Cash. So while it was Moreno and Ramsey creating for Cash in the first half, when Bailey came on, Bailey created for the left flank. And that's why Moreno shone. I think this is why Alex Moreno is probably going to be fantastic for Aston Villa, regardless of opponent over the next few weeks. Because number one, Moreno is going to be fantastic on the creative front in the first half. And then he's probably going to be amongst the finishing chances in the second, while the right creates for him.
Nice. I've just made my decision to hit him in. All right, cool. And we are getting through these, I think, relatively quickly here. So I think we might even have some time for some quick questions at the end. We'll do a rapid fire for questions, because there are several questions coming in. I have starred your questions, and we will get back to them. I think we have about three or four of them in there now. With that in mind, we'll move on to the next fixture here. Oh, and sorry, it's the sad one for you. West Ham Wolves. West Ham 3, Wolves nothing here. West Ham 3 goals with 1.13 XG. Wolves 0 goals with 0.66 XG. So square that for us.
Well, I'm kind of wondering what the XG of the disallowed goal would have been for Wolves. Because, yeah, that was a pretty ponderous decision. But, yeah, let's first of all laud West Ham's clinical finishing, because three counter-attacks gave three goals. One of it, ironically, off a Wolves corner, which we should defend a lot better. Yes, the clean sheet, though, I think we need to talk about that, because this particular West Ham clean sheet did not come about because of Fabianski. Let's put that to mind first. Wolves' poor finishing came from the fact that they did not have anybody that directly hit West Ham's weaknesses. West Ham had been thoroughly exposed over the last few weeks, especially with their defense being particularly passive. But in this case, Wolves' strengths actually played into West Ham's hands. The problem here is that... where do we even start? Okay, first things first. Wolves lacked pace. I think that is something that we have to address. But it's probably going to be a short-term thing, because Aynuri, who is usually their left wing back, came on for Bellegarde, who was the left wing back in this particular case. So... Aynuri might even start the next game, which we wouldn't see the same weaknesses and so on. But West Ham, finally, playing Kudus on the right, playing Bowen through the centre. I think it has to be said that all of this is still linked together by Paqueta. But if you look at the three different assists here, one was from deep, one was relatively wide, and the third one was central. So this one really is 100% the Lucas Paqueta show, and he deserves this bonus. So what we need to talk about, at least in terms of interest, right? Number one, will Bowen do well against United, Arsenal, and Brighton up next? Answer is, once again, probably yes, because Bowen mysteriously gets chances. But in this particular case, his goal came about arguably from poor goalkeeping. But there is an element of being fair here to say that a lot of shots that Wolves concede right now, I don't know why, happens to go between defenders' legs. Doesn't matter who it is. Like, as long as somebody runs at the Wolves' back line, we tend to concede goals that shoot through a defender's legs, be it Dawson, Semedo. Yeah, I don't understand how that comes about, and I've never looked into it before. How, like, shots become infinitely more difficult when they go through a defender's legs. Yeah, but more on that soft factor if we see a trend to that. But that's how the Bowen goal came about. And really, we have to laud the pace and the decision-making of Kudus, because on the right-hand side, he clearly knows when to out-sprint his opponent, and Paqueta knows when to find him. So I would say that against United and Brighton is would be the two games that he would shine the brightest. And if West Ham take the lead early, they will do extremely well against Sheffield United as well. So those would be the yeah. Oh, sorry, no. Kudus will be away at AFCON by then. Sorry. So yeah, scratch that Sheffield United one.
Yeah, and that's why he's a tough buy right now. But what I liked about West Ham in this one is that they showed open play intelligence. At least Paquetá did. They showed some kind of system where kind of keep it very condensed, find Paquetá on the outlet, and just use Paquetá's left foot to kind of curl things into Kudus's direction. If you can soak up pressure and get Kudus in a one-on-one, we saw the things that happened. While the three assists were very or from different areas of the field, I thought they were similar types of plays. And Bentley absolutely has to do better with the Bowen goal. I mean, he did one of those things. He did one of those dives where you don't go anywhere. You like dive and you're like this and you dive and you stay like this. You don't actually move to the side. And I don't know if he slipped. I don't know if there was a slight slip in his foot. I didn't look that closely. But it felt that way. So I just think he needs to plant his feet better and get his footing. And Bowen's another one of those players that on a team that can't do anything, passive all around the field, and then he just ends up with a goal. Bowen, Watkins, Saka when you don't own him. And I think this element of FPL this season has just made the game extremely frustrating because the results are not following patterns that we're seeing on the field. At least for me anyway. Here we go. 41 minutes in. Haven't asked for any likes, but we're flying through this. This is the last fixture of the game week. If you haven't hit that like, please do so. I don't know how many we have, but we got 20 people in the chat. Thank you for being here. Nice to see a bunch of friends here too. I think the holiday season is in full effect. And somebody mentioned something that since we're so like we're ahead, we got Kieran coming in and say Lucien looking slick. I said this backstage. Lucien's response was that the camera was at a different angle, which cracks me up. On that one, let's go to this one. I mean, this. I was irate at the end of this game. I had to hide him. I'm with my kids. We're trying to have a nice day. This was a waste of time for as a watch. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this, because I think just hearing some kind of intelligence from you will keep my rant in check.
Oh man. Okay. So first things first, we have to commend Klopp for actually making the right substitutions, even though it didn't garner the right outcome. Because attacking United's left was entirely the right idea. Trent had so much freedom and he was barely tested by Garnacho that Salah could basically spend majority of his time in the penalty area waiting for crosses to drop for him. The problem here is that I think usually what we see is that Salah starts wide in the early stages of the game, and then he moves central as the game goes on if they become frustrated. Here, Salah started central, which meant that when Trent crossed the ball into the box, he would be aiming at Diaz, he would be aiming at Nunes, which is good news for you, of course. And to be fair, Diaz did get quite a number of chances. I think the frustrating thing here is that Liverpool were arguably trying to brute force their way through United's defense, and it's not like United were standing tall in their box waiting for crosses to come in. I think it's just the fact that especially towards the last 10 minutes of the game, Trent's crossing became over like no, Trent's crosses were overhit more and more often towards the last 10 minutes of the game, which was probably the most frustrating bit because Liverpool had United exactly where they wanted them. Especially considering the fact that Darwin Nunez was, well, I know you guys called him Nunez last game week, right? But I'd rather call him a nuisance, but because he was an absolute nuisance.
Darwin nuisance.
Darwin nuisance. Yeah, exactly, Darwin nuisance. Because His mere presence drew Johnny Evans so far out of position that Varane was the one covering the wide spaces going 1v1 against Salah. So I think this particular United disarray is going to persist for the next few weeks while they sort out who they want to start at the back. And, you know, I think that wouldn't happen against West Ham so much. But yeah, that Villa home game is going to see Watkins and Bailey, Leon Bailey in particular, going to do real damage there. Okay, one quick note on Szoboszlai. Szoboszlai's role in central midfield was to actually release other runners. I think Klopp made a deliberate decision to have Gravenberch play an extremely free role, and that limited Szoboszlai's influence, unfortunately, here. So I think we just have to keep in mind, if we do want to punt on Szoboszlai, it has to be under very specific conditions. Perhaps, you know, if certain players are injured, then Szoboszlai is the right pick. But yeah, Luis Diaz is a gem. I think you have every right to hold him until you're frustrated enough with him to sell, like after that Burnley game probably. And well, as for United, you know how I do shows with another channel, right? On Thursdays, and there was a question that was asked to the panel, is there ever a time or a parallel universe where we will be interested in United assets? And I said, if Erik ten Hag gets sacked, Rasmus Højlund will be a very, very interesting pick.
I remember and, you said that last week.
Yeah, so it's good. Højlund is still a fantastic player, whether he drops deep, pulls wide, runs behind defenses. He just needs, you know, enough shot volume to get his shooting boots on, and I think he'll figure things out from there.
Yeah, I'll differ a little bit with you on that one. I think what Højlund needs is a different system, and that's why if Ten Hag gets sacked, then that could really bring Højlund's strengths to the fore here. And also, I mean, I think Klopp bottled this one, to be perfectly honest. I mean, you're trying to attack Manchester United's left, but so in doing so, you put your best player inside the box. And he's too, so Salah's inside the box, so he's surrounded by players. He can't get anything done there. Szoboszlai is not taking advantage of that, of attacking United's left either, because it's Gravenberch who has the free role. So right there, two massive mistakes, and then they led to compounding mistakes once decisions were made. So since Salah was ineffective further up the field, what happened? He dropped deeper and wider. So he was the link. He became the link on the right-hand side, super wide and super deep. So he wasn't making any penetrating runs, rendering him ineffective. The passes across to Luis Diaz, they took an eternity to get there, which rendered him ineffective. And then like you said, we have like this whole system where Liverpool is just trying to force something into congested areas, instead of actually having some intelligence and knocking the ball around. Honestly, this game was two dysfunctional teams trying to do something that neither one of them seemed really capable of doing. And I was upset at this whole thing. It's funny that you say that Luis Diaz doesn't feel like a gem, I'll tell you that. I mean, when did I bring him in? I think I brought him in after Man City. So for Fulham, Sheffield United, Palace, and Manchester United, 2-3-1-3. It doesn't feel like a gem. I was close to rage transferring him out. I made the sensible move. Watkins is in and all of that. But yeah, this was an unenjoyable couple of hours for me. I have to be honest. Before we get to the thank yous, let's go to some quick questions here. If you do have a question, Throw it in there. I've starred a few. We have about five. We're going to get through them really quickly. We're at 48 minutes. And we'll be out of here very soon. Pranava Donkey says, Pau versus Konsa, worth the 0.2 million?
Oh, big yes for
Pau's
me.
Pau's injured, though.
Pau. Oh, really? Oh, my God. You know, as an outside center back, he has so much free space in that 3-5-2. He put in some good crosses, some really good quality crosses from the left side. Such a shame.
So Pau is injured, but I would just go for Alex Moreno, right? Cheaper than both.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe not nailed. Maybe Dean, there's still some time for Dean there. Not really sure about that. We can ask our resident Villa expert, Craig. See, maybe he's in the live chat tomorrow. I don't know. if he is or not. Multi-Live Evil says, is Ferguson or Pedro an option?
João Pedro is the better player for Brighton's system because of Pascal Gross, right? But yeah, you just don't know when he'll start games. I think they intentionally, they have two strikers that they swap with another two strikers where they start with Lallana and Ferguson in the first half and they swap them out for Buonanotte and João Pedro in the second. So, like, as long as João Pedro doesn't start games, Brighton have no chance of wiping teams away 2-3-4-1. Yeah,
and I have to say, like, I do see Ferguson's talent. I see his potential and all of that, but potential isn't a real thing. It's something that we project forward, right? So Lallana and Ferguson is so much less inspiring than Buonanotte and Pedro. When Buonanotte and Pedro are in there, there's much more creativity. There are more fluid runs. The finishing of Ferguson, they miss the finishing of Ferguson. But I much prefer the creative setup there. But yeah, nobody's nailed, so stay away. K7, is Douglas Luiz a good pick in general?
Oh, yes, if you do not believe in like the template midfield five right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a template of five midfielders right now that is very, very difficult to break because, you know, FPL is a dumb game.
Yeah. What I will say is if I were considering Douglas Luiz, it would be to take Saka on with movements elsewhere. I would have the Palmer, Gordon, Son Salah, and take Saka. Take on Saka. That would be me though. That's just me. Biswanath Kaur says when will Haaland return? We don't know this. We're thinking maybe in game week 19 if he's healthy. We have to see kind of what his participation and everything is in at the Club World Cup. FPL discomfort. Do we have any stats on how many Onana kicks went out for a throw? We don't, but tomorrow I will be getting into some Onana stats that will surprise you because as low as the lows have been, tough to say, highs for Onana, that he has had equal highs. So I think we'll get into that. And people are kind of cherry picking the negatives when it comes to him. I haven't pre-read these. I mean, he said, Colm comes in. Am I right in saying that the attacking Man United players never seem to find Haaland when he makes his runs?
Yes and no. In the end, United have a choice when they see Haaland making his runs, right? Because, first things first, you have to see who has the ball when Haaland makes his runs. Unfortunately, in the most recent game against Liverpool, I want to take a guess who has the biggest decision to make in the advanced midfield.
Scott McTominay.
Yep. So Haaland has this propensity to move towards the left side. If you are Bruno Fernandes, if you are even Sofyan Amrabat, you will have this ability to pin the ball, look up, and actually play a pass down the left side. If you are McTominay is what you call a wall player, or at least someone who plays off the shadow. You have to pass the ball to somebody else in order to find McTominay. So when you play the ball to McTominay, he can only play the ball back to the same side. So what happened against Liverpool was that when United attacked down the right-hand side and Haaland makes his runs, right, you would see McTominay like completely aware of Haaland behind him. But McTominay just does not spin fast enough to play the pass to make the angle to the passes behind him. And so McTominay has to play it back to Anthony. So, you know, you just see this little passing sequence down the right side that ends up in the dead end. And that's why watching United is so frustrating, because their right wing has arguably, you know, so much potential, and yeah, it's just stuck.
I will say I thought that was the one. I thought Anthony was brighter. It was a little bit brighter against Liverpool. I saw some things where his ability started to shine there. Now that was one nice thing I took from it. I hope we see more of what he can do. It's a good one. 54 minutes in, Kieran, FPL discomfort. Is Richarlison about to break the template? It's especially with Son of the Asia Cup. In the Asia Cup, how soon is too soon?
Well, I don't think he'll break the template. He'll just replace it. It's the
I
timing is so
think.
nice that yeah. Sun to Richarlison will fund whatever striker you have going up into Haaland.
So I would say Richarlison. It's what there are other at like. Is he good this week? Sure, he could be good this week. Could you bring him in next week? Yeah, you could bring him in next week. You might be thinking of bringing Haaland and City players back in there though. But I think next week, Brighton is a fine fixture. They have Bournemouth after that, so United after that. It's unfortunate it's away, but I think anytime from now on, it's not too early for Richarlison in my opinion. Multilive Evil, Pedro Ferguson just covered that. Multilive Evil again. Botman Livermento Burn. Whom to pick for the next two? Can't afford Trippier.
Gotta be burned.
It's got to be Burn, right?
It's gotta be burned. You don't have a choice, actually. You don't have a
Yeah.
choice because, I mean, a player recovering from injury such as Botman is very likely to do that injury again. You know,
It's
it's not
wintertime.
it's not
It's
yeah.
cold, muscles get tight. Yeah, and Livramento with Burn healthy, and I mean maybe Livramento still with now that Fabian Schär is out, right? Trippier will be back. Schär is out, so you
No, then
have
Burn is the better pick actually, because when Cher got injured, Burn played centre back and they fielded Emil Kraft at right back instead.
Yeah.
So, yes, Livramento has every chance of playing left back when Trippier comes back. That is true, but we know that that's going to be a short-lived decision because if Cher is the Cher injury a short-term one?
It didn't look like looked like a hamstring. So
Oh, okay.
we don't know, but I think Burn is the one. He's the safest one, and he's getting in the box. He headers. He's 11 feet tall, you know. We'll move on here at 50, almost 57 minutes, and then we'll get out of here. Get those questions in. We're just going to get like two through a few more here. Is there anyone better over the next two than Botman slash Konsa?
At that price.
Moreno, Alex Moreno, if you want some upside.
Yeah. What's his price?
I think 4.4. While you check it,
Okay.
I will bring up the next question. K7. So we need Trippier now. You do and you don't. You might say, you can't get to Trippier, but you can get to two cheaper ones. You could double up on like you can get Dubi, Dubravka, and one of the budget defenders. How much is Moreno?
Five.
Oh, he's 5 million. Well,
Not easy.
thing above. Yeah, it's not easy. And yeah, I still might do it. We have money, right? If we're selling Haaland. And we'll get out on this one. 58 minutes in. Thank you at FPL Discomfort. Cheers, gent. Top show. Lucien, top work as always. I don't know how you turn it around so quickly. Well, I do know actually, because you text me at all hours updating me on your work. So
I'm probably going to, well, I hope my wife is not outside, but yeah, I might stay up until 3 a.m. to finish part two of my thread since the work is
oh
already done.
goodness. Okay, well. Thank you everybody for being in the chat. We will be back tomorrow, 24, 20, 23 hours now, actually. I think no, 23 and a half hours. I think we're something like that. So come back here, check out the show, give everybody a follow at teacher underscore FPL. I'm Gabe at FPL Lens. Thank you for joining us. And let me do these things right this time because I don't always do this right, do I? And we will be out. Peace.